Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family owned from the start. Same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Beckley SAB to CV 2024, Proximo, Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.
The John Anik and Kenny Florian Podcast. John Anik and Kenny Florian.
I love them. I can't get enough of them.
Let's hear that Boston next.
Big jab there from Duffy and Frank Mir.
There are a couple of absolutely self-involved bull artists.
Here are your hosts, John Anik and Kenny Florian.
Headshot, bang, done.
Oh, great to have you with us on a Wednesday, the 1st of February, the year 2023. It's episode 385 of the Anik and Florian podcast, and we are thrilled to be joined today. I don't know if you're aging in reverse, but you're definitely getting more handsome. The number 4 ranked UFC welterweight contender, Bilal, remember the name Muhammad. You're at the gym right now. Young LA on the collar. You look like $1 million.
my brother. Dude, man, you're my second favorite Anik brother ever, dude. This is like the best thing ever.
You know, my twin brother, who you host Remember the Show with, has often said to people that he has met along the way in the UFC, I hope I don't come across as disingenuous because I probably not only sound like my twin brother, but we say the same things. We think the same things. So we're not sort of being complimentary just for the sake of being complimentary. So you just finished training though, yeah?
Yeah. Just got some sparring day here. You just missed GM3. He was over here. Gerald was out here, came down from Wisconsin. So it was a fun little time on Wednesday.
That was pretty funny when you went on the Joe Rogan Experience and you didn't necessarily mention Gerald Merchard as an elite grappling training partner. And he went at you pretty good on social media.
Dude, it was like heartbreak. I tell people all the time, like when you're in that mindset, you're talking to Joe Rogan, you get nervous. I meant to say, I'm not a black belt. Because I'm not a black belt. So I like to say, like, bro, I'm not even a black belt. I'm beating these black belts, these great jiu-jitsu guys. Gerald, I sent my apology to Gerald. Gerald's the man. Like, I learned a million times more than I would ever learn from anybody else. Gerald's like my coach, my brother. Definitely wouldn't be here without him.
I'm not sure that any athlete has gotten more love on the Anik and Florian podcast YouTube channel over the years than Gerald Merchart. You know, he knows where his bread is buttered. We talk about him being a great analyst. Obviously, he's been prominently featured on Remember the Show. We got a lot of love for GM3 across the board.
Yeah, for sure. And like I said, people look at him and they don't understand how good he really is. Just a book of knowledge.
Yeah.
Steps up and he fights the best of the best. These new upcomers. Like, you don't care who they put in front of him. Like, dude's a man. Dude's a monster. And these fans need to start respecting him more.
History is going to look back fondly upon everything that Gerald Merchart has accomplished. Same can be said for Neil Magny and other guys who I think a lot of their success in some part is rooted in longevity and answering yes all the time. All right, so we're talking to you on a Wednesday. You just finished training. How would today differ from a Wednesday if you were smack dab in the middle of training camp for a specific opponent?
The sparring would be a lot harder. So right now it's more technique-based. I did pads earlier. Then it's more so now just working on Gerald, helping him out for his upcoming fight that he got coming up. So I'm mimicking his opponent a little bit, giving him a different look. But if it's my guy, if I got a fight coming up, however soon it is, he would adjust his way of sparring, his way of fighting me. That's why I said it's like no matter what style I'm going against, my training partners, since we're a small group, they all adjust for that. So they all want to see me win. So they're going to change their style up. And in general, you get better at doing being a better fighter because I'm watching tape on this guy and I say, oh, he does it like this. Let me see. Maybe that'll work for me. And then I go into my fight with a new tool, a new weapon that I wouldn't have had before.
All right. Well, speaking of new weapons, everything about Bilal Muhammad essentially has evolved, right? The social media, the style. We'll get to the social media a little bit later, but everything about you, your fight game. But I want to go back to January 19th, 2019. My twin brother likes to remind people that you haven't lost a fight in more than 4 years, but that was the last time you lost a fight. It came against Jeff Neal. I believe it was the first UFC live event on ESPN. What do you remember about that time in your life, about your preparation, that fight week in Brooklyn, and ultimately that fight night against Jeff Neal, the last time you were bested in the octagon?
Just a different mindset. I think I went into that fight and that mindset with, I know that my cardio is a tool. And I was like, oh, this guy's going to get tired. And it gets to the third round and he's still in there with me. And also, you know, you got General Saif Saud screaming, and he's screaming from in the third round, like, just light boxing. And I'm assuming, oh man, all right, he's just gonna go light boxing there. He may be tired. Boom, get hit with a head kick. I'm like, bro, what the heck? Say what the heck? You freaking liar. but no, it was just, I think, like I said, those losses helped build me up to what I am today. Every single loss I've had, every single moment I've been down, it's only made me stronger. It made me change the way I've trained, the way I've thought about training, the way I've looked at fights and studying fights. So now I feel like since that fight, I've been on like the perfect trajectory of what I need to do in every single training camp, the way I need to look at every single fight. I went down there after that fight, trained with Jeff Neal, trained with CoachSafe, because I want to see what these gyms are doing. All right, he just beat me. I don't have too much of an ego to go down there and be like, well, I'm not going to talk to this guy. I'm not going to look at this guy, blah, blah, blah. Like, all right, well, let me see what he does different over there that I'm not doing here. And let me bring that type of energy and that training experience back to my training room. And I think that I've done that and it's only made me better.
It is just remarkable, whether I'm your friend or not, or just a mixed martial arts fan, to look at just the physical and the mental maturation and plucking this thing from this person and Khabib Nurmagomedov coming into the mix recently. Let's touch on that a little bit. He was in your corner for the win over Sean Brady. I don't have to tell you he is no longer an active corner man. He will not be there for Islam Akhachev's first title defense in Perth. I would imagine he's not going to have a future role with Team Muhammad, but given the fact that you said he had so much value on fight night, is it out of the realm of possibility that one time down the line, maybe in a championship setting, he could maybe not be there omnipresent during training camp, but just show up on fight night for you?
Yeah, I hope so. Like, I would definitely would want that, because the energy, like I said, he brings to the locker room, to the cage. When you're walking out with Khabib behind you, it's, you just have a whole different confidence to you. And like, I would message him now, even recently, when I thought I was going to have a sooner fight, hey, what do you think of this guy? And he would respond back. And the way he breaks down fights is different as well. And he takes it serious. Even when I fought Sean Brady, he would like flew to Turkey. And then while he was like on the plane, he messaged me and was like, hey, I see he does this only with this hand. So make sure you're paying attention to that. Work on that while you're in the gym. Have one of these guys put you in the guillotine in that way. So the knowledge that he brings is endless. And if he just shows me one little thing or says one little thing to me, it'll give me a different confidence level as well. If I know I'm talking to Khabib and he's like, hey, I see this, and this with any of these guys, I'm going to be like, well, if he sees it, then I need to work on it. And I need to adjust to that.
It is interesting to hear you say that. Even for me as a commentator, right? You end up leaning on certain people and trusting certain people. Dean Thomas, before he was featured on our broadcast, used to send me like those films that he would create for his athletes. I remember his breakdown of Ronda Rousey for Amanda Nunes, and it just opened my eyes up to what a really elite MMA mind could do as far as the preparation and really extracting things on film. So that's interesting to hear you delve into that. All right, so Gilbert Burns, Kamaru Usman, Bilal Muhammad, are you all represented by Ali Abdelaziz?
Yes.
All right, so I didn't necessarily plan on having this conversation today. This is not in my notes, but that would seem to me to be a conflict of interest. Now, you guys have talked about this on Remember the Show. I love Ali. He is a dear friend of mine, but I just don't know how he can serve three elite welterweight masters at this point in time. Like, it's crazy to me that he could effectively, optimally serve all three of your best interests, given the fact that you all can lay claim to a championship opportunity right now. Maybe Gilbert can't right now, right? But I don't know, man. It seems a little bit messy to me. And you can feel free to answer no comment.
No, exactly. Like, I understand. For me, I like to try to put myself in other people's shoes, especially with this Gilbert Burns situation. And I've dealt with it already before before I fought Luque. It was supposed to be me against Chimaev. And then Ali represents me, Gilbert, and Luque. And then he calls me up and he was like, hey, if you fight Chimaev, Gilbert and Luque don't have an opponent. And I'm like, I don't care what they have. They're not my teammates. They're not we're cool, but it's like, I'm trying to get to the top and Chimaev is the way to get there. And we had to adjust and he's like, well, I'll give you Luque. And obviously I wanted that rematch anyway. So I was like, oh, okay, I'll take that. But then you see it again happening again with Kobe Covington, where we were like in talks for like 3 weeks before Gilbert's fight. And they were like, you're going to fight Kobe. And I got excited. I'm pumped up. And they're like, you're going to do the Ultimate Fighter. And I'm like, okay, cool. Could I say it on Joe Rogan's show, the biggest podcast platform in the world? No, you don't want to do that. You don't want to piss anybody off before it's announced. So then I'm like, okay, well, whatever. We have a bunch of other stuff to talk about. But then Gilbert fights, and then boom, he announces, yo, me against Kobe on Ultimate Fighter. And you're like, wait, I thought we weren't supposed to say that. And secondly, I thought how do you know about that? Obviously, it was, we had the same management. So I'm assuming Gilbert, before the fight, was trying to call me out saying, oh, you know, Bilal Muhammad ducked me, this, this, and this. And I'm assuming that Ali probably said, no, Bilal's going to fight Kobe. Why are you calling him out? And he's like, wait, why does he get the Ultimate Fighter opportunity and I don't? So I'm seeing it from all ends. But like I said, if I want a manager, if I want my guy Ali, you have to be able to tell this guy, like, or keep your mouth shut when it comes to other people's business, I think.
Right.
Because otherwise, it's going to, obviously, we're all fighting for the same cause. We're all fighting to be there. And Ultimate Fighter is a huge opportunity. So if you tell Gilbert that I'm having it, obviously, he's going to want to do it. And then he has the biggest platform right now because he just fought and he has the mic in front of him. So that if I would have said it on Joe Rogan, I think it would have blew up a lot better and a lot faster. So we had a little arguments here and there. But like I said, I don't think it's anything where Ali likes this guy better than me or that guy better than me. I think he's just in a hard spot and trying to manage all three guys. And then when you're looking at also like this also, because it gives you that look too, because Ali's telling me you're going to fight Kobe next and Gilbert's going to fight Masvidal. But then Gilbert's on Twitter still talking trash to me. And I'm like, bro, wait, hold up. Is he really fighting Masvidal and not fighting Kobe? And he's like, yeah. So I'm like, why does he keep tweeting out like, oh, I'll fight anybody in London, this, this, and this. So it really didn't make no sense to me from what Gilbert was doing, but I didn't get it. But obviously people just want stuff for like Twitter retweets and things like that. So in the end, I'm hoping that what Ali said was true, where Gilbert gets Masvidal and I get Kobe, because that's the fight I want is Kobe.
UFC top-ranked welterweight contender Bilal Muhammad with us here on the Anakin Florian podcast. I appreciate you providing some candor and clarity to that, because I'm not sure there's a better manager in the game than Ali Abdelaziz, but you can't serve all masters all the time. I remember back in the day talking to our Hall of Fame matchmaker, Joe Silva, about some of my broadcasting challenges, and it just felt like we were always trying to serve all these different masters, and that became an impossibility. But I do think the big fight for you is going to materialize, and to that end, correct me if I'm wrong, and you know how much love I have for Gilbert Burns. We have the same strength and conditioning coaches down here. The only reason I train at the Institute of Human Performance is because he got me for Christmas, like a package of training sessions there. I have mad love for Gilbert Burns. But correct me if I'm wrong, the path to the top for you more than likely would go through Colby Covington or Khamzat Chimaev, and a win against one of those two individuals you believe will get you the championship opportunity, and that is your thesis statement. Is that correct?
Exactly, yeah. My initial one, obviously, it's like if I beat Gilbert Burns, they're going to be like, well, Colby or Khamzat's still ahead of you. So it was pointless for that fight. It didn't really make any sense. But obviously, I have an ego. If somebody's talking trash, for sure, let's fight. But the Khamzat situation, they said he's moving up. So he's moving up to middleweight. So I'm like, all right, well, I'll put my aim and attention on Kobe then, because he's the only one ahead of me. And that's the only one that Dana White's been saying for years, if Usman wasn't here, he would be the champion. He's the guy that I've been wanting to fight for years. And it's a big opportunity, big fight. And that's that name that's going to get me over the edge, where I mean, I had the winning streak. I had the long streak. I just beat the undefeated bulldozer that they thought was going to be the champion soon, but that didn't do enough for me. They still think I need that one big name, and I think that Kobe will definitely be that name.
Bilal Muhammad has the streak. Go to his Wikipedia page. You can't find any red on it unless you have to like scroll the fuck down like 4 years ago, right? We're talking about wins in 8 of his last 9, 8-0 with 1-0 contest. So obviously, you sort of are playing the waiting game, and Colby Covington has seemingly been idling, laying back in the cut for a little while. You mentioned Khamzat Chimaev and his future in all likelihood at middleweight. Now we have the fight between Gilbert Burns and Jorge Masvidal, and I'd imagine there's some appeal for you fighting a guy like Gamebred, but not unlike Gilbert, you're probably a 4 or 5 to 1 favorite against him. It's not necessarily a championship trajectory fight, and stylistically, obviously, I think that poses some challenges for him. You know, how do you see the Covington fight and the Masvidal fight, a win over either one of those guys, propelling you and Gilbert forward, respectively?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, the Masvidal fight would have been a big fight. He still has a big name no matter what, and he's still going to have those fans, kind of like the Diaz brothers, where they're going to be with you. They're going to watch you tune in no matter what. So that was another fight where everybody was booked, and I was like, well, okay, if none of these guys are trying to fight, then give me Masvidal in London. And they said, oh, well, we're not looking at that right now. I was told they weren't looking at that right now. So then I was like, okay. Then they brought up Kobe to me. And I said, wait, Kobe's back. He's thinking about fighting. I wanted that fight more than anything Anyway, so then I realized that he was at the PI. People were telling me they saw him there. So I'm assuming that he's negotiating with the UFC or talking with the UFC. So he wants to be back. So that got me a little bit hyped up about it. And for Gilbert, you're looking at a guy like Masvidal. And like I said, 3-fight losing streak. He's number, I think, 11 right now or 12. So if you win that fight, are you going to say, how is Bilal Muhammad still ahead of me? You fought number 14 in Magny. Now you're fighting number 12. And Masvidal, you're a huge favorite against both of those guys. You're meant to win those fights. Me, I just beat number 5 Wonderboy. I was an underdog. And then I beat number 5 Luque back-to-back. I was an underdog. And then I'm still an underdog when I fight Sean Brady, who's number 7. I'm beating guys that I'm underdogs against. I'm not meant to beat these guys. So that's why I feel like I deserve to be ahead of them anyway. And I deserve to be ahead of Kobe anyway. I should be like number 2 right under Usman right now if I'm being candid with it. That's what makes the most sense. But hey, if I have to go through Kobe, I'm down to do that. I'm not asking for extra money. I'm not asking for pay-per-view points. I'm saying, give me Kobe. Give me Chimaev.
All right, looks like we just lost Bilal Muhammad for a minute there, but it is all very interesting stuff when it comes to this welterweight division. And we now transition to the general Saif Saud. And if Bilal wants to join us on the back end, that's great. The only thing I failed to get into with him was, oh, there he is. We have a little, crossover.
Hey, what's up?
No. Hey, he jumped right when you were out. That was it. I just stepped right in. Look at that, Bilal. It's that just like the welterweight division, man. You slip up for 1 second.
That's right.
Somebody is there to take your spot.
What the heck, Cody?
Tired of snooty wines and their old wine culture? Confused by words like malolactic fermentation? Yeah, we are too. So with 19 Crimes, you can do the fancy schmancy tilt-sip smell routine, or don't. 19 Crimes is the rebel of wine and culture, telling the stories of rogues and rule breakers who overcame adversities. From convicts banished to Australia, to the legendary icon Snoop Dogg himself, 19 Crimes wine is defiant by nature, bold in character, and always uncompromising. 19 Crimes, the official wine of UFC. Pick up in stores nationwide or online at 19crimes.com. Enjoy responsibly. 2024, Sonoma, California.
Unbelievable. Hey, Bilal, before we let you get out of here and we get to Saif, and Saif, thanks for your patience. Gilbert Burns, and I know you're sick of hearing that name, he has predicted that Leon Edwards will win the March 18th championship rematch, the trilogy fight against Kamaru Usman. What do you think about that fight? I mean, largely his prediction is rooted in the altitude or lack thereof compared to Salt Lake City, Utah, where they last fought. Who do you believe will emerge between Usman and Edwards? And obviously, you're going to factor prominently in that equation thereafter.
I mean, I think Usman, if I'm looking at it, his wrestling was way better than him. He outstruck him on the feet. He broke him mentally. And you could say it was altitude or anything, but Usman still trains at high altitude. Usman's still going to come with that same type of cardio, that same type of pressure. I think Leon got backed up to the cage, and I think the moment was a little bit too big for him. And Usman's going to do the same thing again. He's going to back him up. He's going to wrestle a lot earlier. Being in the cage with Leon, I felt his body, I felt his strength, and I don't think it was there. I don't think his wrestling is there. And you look at the guys, a lot of the guys that he's fought, Nate Diaz, Donald Cerrone, he's a lot bigger than all these guys. And against a lot of those guys, he'll take them down and control them on the ground. He's not going to be able to do that against Usman. He's going to have to stay on the feet. I know his striking is supposed to be this next level thing, but I think when you're moving backwards and you're on your back foot, that's what kills your cardio. And I think that's what's hurting Leon. And he's coming out now trying to talk all this talk and say Usman's going to be a snooze fest, yada, yada, yada. But Usman don't care. Usman's here to win. Usman's here to get his title back. And if I'm Usman, you're going to play the smart route. And the smart, easy route is to take Leon down and just dominate him on the ground, because that's what the easiest path was.
And if I'm Bilal Muhammad, I'm just looking for clarity one way or the other. Just let this be a clean result, a clear winner, and then we can get to all the big things that inevitably lie ahead for you. But I hope you get the Colby Covington fight. I really hope it's on the Ultimate Fighter. I appreciate your time, my brother, and I look forward to big things the rest of the way in 2023 and beyond, my man. Thank you.
Thank you, brother. Appreciate you. All right, go ahead.
There he is. Chicago's finest, Bilal Muhammad, actually has a law degree from the University of Illinois. That was sort of one of the things that is going to end up on the cutting room floor. Like, I wonder if at what point do you really like punt on being a lawyer if you're Bilal Muhammad, you know?
You know, I went to law school too, John.
I could see you in a courtroom any day of the week. I mean, that's a pretty good setting for you, I would think, a courtroom.
Yeah, I mean, there's too many lawyers already in the world, though. So when you get a political science major. I mean, yeah. You know, as my dad said when I graduated, he goes, now what are you going to do? Like, I mean, there's really nothing. You got to go to law school. So, yeah, I went to law school, but was never an attorney.
All right. Well, if you don't know that voice, he is the head coach, founder of Fortis MMA in Dallas, Texas, USA, one of the best corner men and coaches in all of combat sports. I actually believe you could realize success coaching defense in the NFL if that was your chosen craft. The great Saif Saud is with us. The fucking general. It's good to have you. I wanted one-on-one today. No Ken Flo. He actually has a PFL conflict, but I need 20 minutes with the general all to myself. It's good to see you. How you doing?
Listen, Jay, when you wear that fucking shirt, you can have an hour. Of my whatever you need, you just let me know. You got when you're wearing that home team shirt, man, you just getting me pumped up already.
All right, well, I'm going to try not to hit you too hard today, but you have said to me in the past privately that once you produce a UFC champion, you may not stick around all that long thereafter, and hopefully all of your Fortis MMA brethren aren't necessarily ingesting this. No, I say that tongue in cheek, but now you get your first UFC title as a head coach, courtesy of Brandon Moreno. Yes, it comes in a somewhat unorthodox way, but upon reflection, what are your whole thoughts on the manner in which your first UFC championship materialized?
Well, I was talking to Ryan Spann about this yesterday, and the reality is that the Brandon fight had a lot of different components, but in some ways, you know, that's like, this is my 80th UFC win, and I said that on Ariel, and I've been in that corner a lot of times, and I appreciate, you know, your kind words, and you've always supported me and ever since day one. And I've got to acknowledge that you're the man, but there was a lot of pressure for this fight because when are you going to go in a title fight where you have a fourth fight where they're 1-1-1 and every razor close every fight. So that, you know, and then the circumstances obviously were, you know, weren't perfect for anybody. So to come in there on, you know, just barely 6 weeks and have to get everything organized, there was actually probably more pressure on this situation than there would be for me if I take Ryan or Jeff or one of these guys, because that'll be their first title fight. It won't be a quadrilogy. I mean, you know, and
right.
So, and it won't be in Rio and it won't be with all the, so the pressure from Brandon's fight and the gravity of it and how big it was and in enemy territory. And then, you know, obviously Figgy knew him so well. So when I was crafting the strategy and thinking about all that, I was got to think about Figgy knows every little thing about Brandon. How do we get Brandon to do things differently in a way to kind of just, because I believe Brandon was a better fighter and I believe that we could prove it pretty easily. And to get that all done was huge, and to get it all done fairly cleanly, to be honest, you know, those guys are lucky, man, because now I have that experience and, you know, and for our strategy to work and for Brandon to listen and make the adjustments he did, he's a great student, and for us to dominate the fourth fight so big, it was great. And look, championships are good for everybody because they raise the stakes for everybody. They make everybody better, and winning makes everybody better, and it solves everything. So it doesn't really matter who it is or how it is or what it is.
Yeah.
It's the situation, and that title fight will probably be one of the hardest title fights that you could coach because of all the factors.
Yeah, no, you put it well as usual. And whatever happens with Jeff Neal or Ryan Spann or the next guy walking through those doors, no one can ever take this undisputed UFC title away from Brandon Moreno and from you as a coach. So I congratulate you on that.
Thank you.
And again, there's so much that I could get into, but I get a lot of credit for the sacrifice I make as a commentator, being away from my family 100 nights a year to pursue what I love to do. But doesn't even begin to describe what a coach's sacrifice is. Can you just set up real quickly what your December was to hold with your family compared to what it ended up being going back and forth from Vegas to Texas and all that?
Yeah, I was just talking to my wife about this. You know, and that's the reason why you alluded to it. Like, you know, hey, how much longer, right? I've been doing this since 2006. Full-time was an athlete, fought from 06 to 09 under Greg Jackson. Lived in Albuquerque, traveled a lot. We would go to Vegas all the time. Obviously, things have exploded and changed. But with the UFC's growth also comes cards almost every week, multiple fighters on cards. Everything has grown exponentially. So, you know, we used to leave maybe once a month or, you know, maybe on a crazy month, we'd leave twice a month. Now I'm gone every week. And last year was a huge year for us. We won Gym of the Year. You know, it was a great year, and it was a busy year. We had tons of big fights, tons of wins, but there were huge fights, ranked fights. So once December came around, I had got done doing the show, and I was like, man, I'm going to be home for about, you know, 5 weeks, 4 or 5 weeks. And I just was looking forward to it so much, John. I was like, my kids and my daughter, you know, I got daughters, you know, the feeling and making the plans and, hey, dad, we're going to do this, we're going to do that and X, Y, Z. And so when this came and this opportunity came, you know, when I looked at it, I realized that not only was I not going to be home, but I was going to have to do more than I've ever done. So, man, I was gone every week. You know, I mean, all that whole 5 weeks was dedicated to being in Dallas for the first half of the week. And then I would fly to Vegas on Wednesday and we would do Brandon sparring on Wednesday night. Thursday, we would train. Friday, we would train. Friday, you know, Thursday night, Friday morning, Saturday morning. And then I would get on a plane and fly back and then come back and coach my team. And I was trying to do, you know, I was trying to coach my team while I was here twice as much as I normally would to make up for not being here on the second half of the week. So that was front loading all that work and really just doing both. But, you know, John, it ended up working out. And not only did it end up working out, but you grow, you go through these hard times and you grow through that space, man. And you just, you know, you expand yourself and you're capable of more. And I knew I could take it on and do it, but I knew Brandon's fight was going to require a lot. And we made sure all of us coaches that were involved put a lot into that camp to make sure he was prepared. And I'm proud of that.
And I know how embedded you were with the entirety of that Brandon Moreno camp, which essentially is a family. And however close you and Brandon were before the fight, I got to imagine going through that title fight together has brought you just exponentially closer. To that end, he has talked a lot about how much you helped him as far as his mental game is concerned. That says nothing of just your mind for the physical and everything else that's going on. But we did get a lot of questions on Twitter about your future in terms of working with Brandon Moreno. Obviously, you do have Matt Schnell, who is a ranked flyweight. I'd imagine there's a wealth of flyweights and bantamweights in Dallas were he to go there. So what can you tell our listeners and viewers about the future between you and the flyweight champ?
Yeah, I just talked to him the other day and I mean, he's excited, man, you know, and he's proud of what we did. And he's like, man, coach, I think we did great. I said, I think we did great too. I mean, we had an amazing execution and it's been nothing but love. And he's excited about coming and training and he's going to come to Dallas and he wants to come and, you know, Brandon's just one of those guys, man. He's just a good character guy, you know, and he recognized the sacrifice that I made and he brought it up at the press conference. You know, he said, coach was coming. He doesn't want credit, but he was coming every week. He said, now I got to go to Dallas and give him some work. So yeah, I'm looking forward to that. But, like I was saying last week, you know, I just want that kid to chill for a while, man. And, you know, our gym is so big and so built up and has so much, you know, so much going on. We don't need to parade around a guy and say, hey, look, we got a champ here. Hey, let's take a bunch of pictures and throw them up. Hey, Cheeseball Central. Let's go. Right. We don't do shit like that. And let the fucking guy have his time. Let him hang out with his family. Let him hang out with his daughters. That guy's got 3 daughters. You know, He's, you know, he also went through the stress and the hardship and all that pressure that Brandon had. He had so much pressure on him for that fight. It was such a big fight, like I previously stated. I mean, there was so much behind that fight that let the guy just fucking decompress, man. And when he's ready to train and, you know, he won't fight until the summer. You know, champs don't fight every 2 months and we'll figure it out. It'll probably be Pantoja. And, you know, we'll start getting ready. You know, he comes from a great team. Obviously, they've had a history together, but I think Brandon's a lot different of a fighter now. And we'll have fun, man. But when that time comes, we will cross that bridge. But we've had that conversation already a few times.
Certainly decompression, though, should be the buzzword. And I don't think anybody would be surprised to see him return for International Fight Week. In all likelihood, it will be Alexandre Pantoja. And I think you had no choice backstage but to sort of intervene there. We have this trend seemingly of athletes hanging out backstage, whether they're backups or otherwise. And seems like the champion, the newly minted champion, can't even get a shower before he has his next opponent like up in his mug. It seemed like finally you had seen too much. We all respect Pahumpa and Pantoja, but this seemed like a little bit too forceful. And finally you sort of said, bro, you got to chill.
Yeah, you got to chill, man. I love Pahumpa. He is a fucking G of a coach. He doesn't get enough credit. I think he is one of the heartbeats of that team down there. And that guy, I see him every week, man. I mean, he's got a close bond with his athletes. He is a great dude, a great coach, and I want to give him a shout out. He was not around when that happened, and I think maybe Pantoja had a couple drinks. It was night, you know. I mean, I don't know what the situation was. It ended up, you know, at first was very just, you know, it was very lovable, but, you know, Brandon's talked about it before. He just kept on asking for a date, and we'll win. It's like, dude, we just walked out of medical, like, literally, and Brandon hurt his knee, and, you know, we were talking about that, and I mean, he's kind of limping around, and you know, it's like, man, dog, at first it was cool, the hug, the respect. Pantoja deserves it. Pantoja's a G, you know, obviously he's got the wins over. I mean, all that's fine, but it was like, man, he's asking for a date and he just kept going. And Brandon is such a respectful guy, and you know, to that end, you know, all the antics and Brandon's just a classy dude, and he was just keeping it classy. And I just want, and I think Pantoja wasn't trying to be disrespectful, it was what it was, but it was just time for me to peel him off with, hey, man, you know, let's go. So, yeah, no big deal. I mean, those guys are going to meet, and you know, but it ain't going to be fucking next week. You know what I'm saying? Right, the guy's got to recover, and he's got to get his body right and all the rest. So,
the general, Saif Saud with us here on the Anakin Florian podcast, MMA Junkies, Gym of the Year for 2022, Fortis MMA. I mean, dude, I could give you my Robert Fallis Corner Man of the Year like every fucking year, but it would just not be objective enough, okay? You've won it like three times already.
I'll take it. You know, I'm waiting for the JA trophy. See, I need a JA trophy for the den, right?
We'll make that happen.
I need some hardware.
All right, we got a few more things that I do want to get to with you before I let you fly. Couple of your higher profile fighters with fights coming up, and then we'll get to your television career. Jeff Neal has regained his momentum after a couple of trying years health-wise and otherwise. For a while, many have suggested that this is your best hope to realize a UFC championship for a homegrown Fortis MMA athlete. He gets Shavkat Rakhmonov March 4th at UFC 285. Guy who a lot of people feel is the uncrowned champion. I mean, gosh, my contemporaries talk about this guy like he is the next fucking coming. What can you tell us about Jeff's preparation and the overall magnitude of that fight, March 4th?
Well, look, Shavkat is a guy that nobody wants to fight. And to piggyback off of what Bilal said, you know, I mean, that welterweight division is just unreal. Those guys, man, the games they're playing up there and the ring around the posy. I mean, they say shit on Twitter that is just a straight up lie. Oh, I'll fight anyone. Oh, this and that. I got the emails, I got the texts, I got everything to prove it. I just would never go there because I don't think it's classy, and I just don't think it's a place for a coach. So, but you know, Bilal's frustrations are well warranted because all these guys turned down Jeff too, and you know, Jeff obviously has a win over Bilal, and I love the hell out of Bilal, respect him. He's come and trained with us, and he's not a guy that we want to fight again. Bilal deserves his, you know, where he's at, but Jeff also with the win over Bilal, like, you know, and it was a dominant win. So, I mean, look, Jeff had almost freaking died. He had a couple bad fights. Bilal beat those guys, credit to Bilal, but there's an argument to be made for new blood up there, but you've got the guys that are just hanging around and trying to stay relevant, and they've got big names. And really that's what people care about. Nobody gives a shit about guys like Jeff yet, except for the hardcore people who understand and know the sport. But, you know, I mean, I understand what the UFC is trying to do. They've got to get the pay-per-views. I mean, I understand everybody's perspective. So on that end, here we are fighting a guy like Shavkat, who was calling Jeff out on Twitter. It probably wasn't really Shavkat. It was probably his manager. And because I don't think Shavkat would do that. But so Jeff was like, hey, fuck it. I'm going to fight this guy. And I said, all right. And he said, calls me and he goes, I'm going to have to meet him now or later. So whatever. And, you know, I respect that about Jeff. And I'm like, Jeff, this is a super hard fight. It's risky. I'm like, you know, I really think he should fight Gilbert. You know, they were right by each other in the rankings. But, you know, Gilbert didn't say a word when Jeff was calling him out that whole time. And then on the flip side, but credit to Gilbert. Gilbert's already fought Khamzat, and he's going to use that. He's going to ride that out. So he fought Magny, and now he's fighting Masvidal. And, you know, what Bilal said is true. Those are easy fights for him. Odds wise, but credit to him, he did fight Khamzat. So That being said, I told Jeff, I was like, look, this is your fight. This is that fight for you. You know, if Jeff goes in there and takes care of business against Shavkat, there is no real argument there again. I mean, because he already has a win over Bilal. And then Gilbert's going to have to face either Bilal or Jeff or somebody before he gets back in the title picture. And obviously, I don't blame Gilbert. He wants Leon to win because he has a loss against Usman, and they're friends too. So there's some strategy being played there by everybody, and there's no easy fights. And the only way that you're going to get to the top in that division is by big explosive finishes like the Luque fight that Jeff had, where it's just like unreal. And so now he's going to try to do that against Shavkat, which is a huge test. Shavkat is very, very good. He's undefeated. He's never lost. But there's nowhere to run in that welterweight division. There's nowhere to go. You can't win this fight and hide out and camp out. You know, the Vicente win was big, but Jeff's not going to get a title shot off that, right? And I know that, and he knows that. So he's going to have to go in there and do something amazing again, which he's did it against you know, many people in the UFC. He's had the Perry fight, the Vicente fight, the Camacho fight. The guy's had some crazy, unreal knockouts. Yeah. And I think that if he can pull that off again, you know, people are going to start calling for that title shot for him. And Jeff can do it, man. He's, you know, I would put Jeff against anybody. And but Shavkat, it might be the hardest fight in the division if Khamzat is going to middleweight, from what I'm hearing. And, you know, right. We'll see.
But yeah, man, like if you think about Jamahal Hill's path, right, how quickly it can happen for somebody who is new blood, who has a finishing style, a crowd pleasing style, right? Because it is not out of the realm of possibility. And I'm not just saying this because the general's here, that if Jeff Neal can finish Shavkat Rakhmonov, who is essentially the boogeyman in the division, it's not out of the realm of possibility that he gets a title fight. No. And that's why for Bilal Muhammad, the Gilbert Burns fight just doesn't make a whole lot of sense because it's not an eliminator. It really isn't, you know? All right. Well, that's the Jeff Neal stuff. It's going to be very interesting. It's a fascinating fight. I know it got delayed a little bit, but I'm glad that it held together. How about Ryan Spann? I mean, another guy who obviously, I think at times has been a victim of lofty expectation, but another main event February 25th against another wicked dangerous guy, Nikita Krylov, another underappreciated guy. And Spann, one of the guys near the top who I don't believe has faced Jamahal Hill. So obviously another huge fight here for Ryan Spann. What are your thoughts on him and ultimately the 205-pound division?
Well, I mean, you look at Ryan Spann, he's just got, you know, incredible skills, athleticism, power in both hands. He's very, very well balanced. But he's going to have to get through a guy like Nikita who, you know, you saw Glover on his title run. Glover fought him to a decision or a split decision. I mean, they had a very close fight. That was Glover, and he was on the ground with Glover three rounds. And I mean, that was Glover when he was climbing up, and he was very dangerous. Nikita is no game. And I mean, he's a guy that can hang in there for five rounds and be there with his experience. He's very balanced. He's got a good kicking attack, good wrestling, good jiu-jitsu. He's not a guy that you can take lightly, but again, he's a guy that you're going to have to try to go through if you want to get to the upper echelon of that 205-pound division. But I feel like if Ryan, you know, back to what I was saying about Jeff, if Ryan has another knockout like he did with Dom, something that clean and impressive and that quick, you know, don't be surprised if you don't see him up there. You know, there was some movement there, and we got a phone call about a pretty potentially big matchup when all that stuff happened with Glover and Ankalaev and Jan. So, I mean, I won't get into it too much, but
yeah,
man, the UFC is all about, dude, it's all about producing. When you go down under the lights and you produce beautiful fights and big knockouts, you get moved up because people want to see that stuff. And Mick Maynard's all over that, man. That guy works. He never stops working, Mick Maynard. Your fighter gets done fighting the very next day. What do you think about 7 weeks from now? What do you think about this and that? And I mean, he just keeps it moving, you know, and it's good. And fighters like that too, you know. And light heavyweight's a little bit different, obviously, than welterweight. You know, Sean's got to untangle all that crap that's going on at welterweight.
Yeah.
Every division is different. So, but that's the thing about Mick. I mean, he is always right when the fight's over, he's on the phone. I mean, and he's a guy that likes to get new blood in there. And you know, that fight, Jamahal came from the contender. And this is the evolution of the sport. And watching the UFC build people from a younger, you know, a different platform and the contender feed him in and showing, you know, Glover obviously being the elder statesman going against the young guy from the contender. So, Yeah, it's just, and it's heart-wrenching for us old timers to see a guy like Glover not win and Shogun not win. And, you know, I mean, us people been in MMA since, you know, 2000, 2005, we're always going to root for those people, but this is just, it's just like watching your parents get old, man. It doesn't feel good, but it's a part of life, you know? And I think that's just a part of this time right now in MMA, watching some of the greats and the golden age kind of, you know, fall on the sword a little, and it's just going to keep happening.
But dude, this fan base turns over like every 2 or 3 years, right? So much so that people were bemoaning the fact that Johnny Walker got a louder pop than Shogun Hua at the weigh-in in Rio. And that's just kind of the way it is. All right, before we let you go, two quick ones. First of all, I need a dark horse fighter from Fortis MMA, or two or three, right? I know this is tough to handpick a fighter or two, but a dark horse fighter from Fortis MMA doesn't necessarily have to be in the UFC, but I'm looking for a fighter that is not in the UFC rankings right now that could be heard from.
Kennedy.
Don't tell me Kennedy and Zetchiku's not ranked.
Kennedy's not ranked. And I'm going to tell you, it's like watching a baby crawl and then start to jog and then start to run. And then soon that's going to be a full sprint. And, you know, I've raised him up like almost all of mine from nothing. I mean, when he came in the gym, you know, he just lost his mom, God rest her soul. But she came and sat down. And I remember she said, he doesn't know anything, but work on my son. Work on him. And I said, all right. And, you know, taught him how to punch, taught him how to move, taught him how to level change, you know, started explaining stuff to him. And now to see him, you know, if he got the main event in that Kutalaba fight, they're like, hey, you guys are the main event. He goes, call Mick and see if we can make it 5 rounds. We're in the back, John. We're in the back. This is 2 hours before the fight. Call Mick and see if he can make it 5 rounds because it'll be better for me. I said, unbelievable. I said, you want the money? You know, like, you want more money? He said, oh, no. Yeah, whatever. Like, I mean, he was so tuned in. He was like, hey, you know, let's go five. Like, and let me tell you something. You got a guy backstage who's a light heavyweight, that size of a man, who is willing to, you know, fight an extra 10 minutes against a monster like Iwan Kutalaba. And I mean, you know, when you're in the back, man, you see the real stuff. You see what the core is, you see what the fabric is of your athlete, and you know them, and you know, sometimes they're scared, they overcome it. Sometimes the fear overtakes them and they lose. Sometimes they shine, you know, but to see him say, oh yeah, call Mick. He said, call Mick and see if they can make it. And so Mick's laughing.
Yeah.
He goes, I don't think they're going to do it. But then he texts me. No. So he's growing up now to that place, man, where he's just like, put me in the water, coach. I just want to be in the water so I can keep swimming. And man, once that guy gets where I think he's going, he's going to be a problem for everybody.
It's amazing. It's amazing to hear you say that. His frame obviously is great. And again, that jab, obviously, when you have that length in that division. I'm sorry to hear about his mom. I remember having a conversation with him early on about his mom, who I believe had ALS, and he was supporting her financially in other ways, right? So I'm sorry to hear that. All right, before we let you go, General Saif Saud with us here on the Anakin Florian podcast. UFC breakdown. Budding television star. They don't let you wear your hat on TV, but you still look great. So obviously, I have thought you to be very capable, whether it comes to being a coach on a broadcast or being featured analytically on a show. So how have you enjoyed that experience? And do you feel like you're long for this media game or not so much?
Well, I appreciate it, John. And I've just got to tell all the viewers, just because I have to tell this story. 2013, John Anik running me down in the tunnel. Please, wait. How do you say your name correctly? I said, it's Saif Saud. I want to get that right. John Anik, 10 years ago, 10 years of perfect pronunciation. John Anik been in the game, busting his ass, enunciating beautifully. And I mean, I'll never forget that. Right. And I always appreciated that. So I like to bring up that story because it's true, because everybody sees the preparation now, but the preparation has been going on forever. And on that note, it's a lot of preparation, man. Doing the show, doing the show has been a big endeavor, but one that I really enjoyed. And, you know, I never saw myself in that role. And when the UFC came to me and asked me to do it, you know, I was obviously, you know, thrilled and thought it was a big compliment, but wasn't sure if it was something I really wanted to do. I've been traveling so much, but I'll tell you the best part of it, John, is that it just made me a way better coach, because I'm consistently looking at the best. Looking at what they do, how they do it, picking up all the little details with the film study, watching champions. It's been really fun. I mean, and you know, I was in Rio and Jamal Hill comes up to me and said, man, That breakdown was so good. He's like, I love that breakdown. His striking coach, hey, man, you know, we really liked it. He said, Jamal's like, don't give away all my secrets. And I thought that was cute. Then in New York, I was in New York in Radio City. And Izzy came up to me and said, hey, he's like, man, I got to talk to you, bro. He said that. He goes, I know I do all that shit, but the way that you explained it, man. Then he had it on his phone. And he's like, I got to show you this Kevin Gastelum elbow that you had broken down. And he was showing it to me and explaining it to me.
Wow.
And put a smile on my face. So, you know, to have all these guys that are having fun with it, enjoying it, and the fans have been great about it. And I've been getting a lot of love for it. So it's what we do, man. And usually we don't do it with a suit and a tie on in a studio. We do it in the gym. Yeah, but
right.
it's what we do, you know.
And to have your work acknowledged by perhaps the most sophisticated striker in UFC history, Israel Adesanya, that's pretty heady stuff. But I can't say that I'm surprised. He's the General Saif Saud, Fortis MMA. Congrats on all your success, my man. And great to have a front row seat for all of it. And obviously, it's wheels up pretty soon. You are not going to be in Perth, Australia. Is that correct?
No. Are you going to Perth?
Yeah, bro. I don't even want to tell you about my itinerary. Three flights, right? The middle leg. Hopefully Mick Maynard's with me. The middle of the three flights from Houston to Sydney, 17 hours, 45 minutes.
Oh, so, man. Yeah, dude.
Longest I've ever been on a plane was 1555. We got 1745 next week.
I've done straight Sydney, straight through, and it was 17, I think, because it's a 45-minute flight from here to Houston. So, you know what? Are you doing Qantas? What are you flying?
I don't know. I think it might be Qantas. But either way, I got a lot of fighters to prepare. Yeah, so I got a lot of work to do on the front end, so.
You'll get it done.
But hey, man, congratulations. Thank you for the time. I'll see you in a few weeks. All right.
Absolutely. Talk to you soon, John.
There he is, the fucking General Saif Saud with us here on the Anik and Florian podcast. Really interesting stuff. And Kennedy and Zechiku, if you don't know, really transitioned from the workforce to fighting to support his mom. And I didn't know that she had passed away. So that kind of hit me pretty heavily there in the middle of that interview. But I love the General Saif Saud. I love that he's getting some television work and just has done a tremendous job. And I remember obviously meeting him in 2013. I believe he was in Brazil cornering Damon Jackson at the time, if I'm not mistaken. But I also remember vividly that conversation about him talking about maybe walking away when he produces a UFC champion. And even though Moreno doesn't necessarily check that box completely, it certainly does in a lot of respects, and I'm happy for Saif. And then one quick thing on Bilal Muhammad, and I know we sort of shortchanged Bully there at the end because we had a little bit of a rocky transition between guests, but there were two things that I just wanted to mention. First of all, just the social media grind, and I know Bilal doesn't have children, but when he started Remember the Show with my twin brother on the Anik and Florian podcast YouTube channel, he might have had 15,000 Instagram followers, and look at him now, hundreds of thousands. And that stuff doesn't happen by accident, right? There's work involved. Obviously, you get a big spike when you headline a UFC event or when you fight in the UFC, but that takes communication with people who are embedded in the MMA Twitter sphere or on Instagram. Earning that respect from people and having a collaboration with fans, that takes time. And I just wanted to give Bilal credit for that. And I will just say Ali Abdelaziz is the fucking man. Like I absolutely love that guy. But if I had him on these airwaves, you could be sure the first question I would ask would be, how do you navigate when you have three guys near the top of a division? You know, would you ever, for a singular negotiation, give Bilal off or give a welterweight off for one single fight negotiation to make sure that they got that fight? It's a tricky situation when you're trying to serve a lot of high-profile athletes. But I think all things considered, Ali does it about as well as anybody else. Yeah, Cody Mero telling me that Bilal has gained almost 100,000 followers in the last 12 months alone. He's got a great fucking co-host in Boston Anik. All right. Thank you all for watching the show today. Hope you enjoy the interviews. We will be back next week, of course, with a full preview and predictions for UFC 284, Makhachev versus Volkanovski. Brian Petrie and Kenny Florian will have six predictions for you for UFC 284. We'll talk to Sean Sheehan, and we will also get into the Tom Brady retirement news and anything else going on in the MMA stratosphere next week. Also, don't forget, merchandise for the show can be had at AnikFlorianPodcast.com. One more sleep merchandise. There are a lot of people making our One More Sleep merch out there, but the only place to get the authentic stuff, millions.co. And by the time most of you watch this, the shirts for Australia and UFC 284 in Perth will be out. Also, don't forget KennyFlorianMartialArts.com for all of your jiu-jitsu needs. And Anik and Florian Rewind, exclusively on UFC Fight Pass, is also live, in which we look back at a fight from the UFC archives. All right, thank you to Saif Saud and Bilal Muhammad. We will talk to you all next week in advance of UFC 284. Thanks to my esteemed producer, Cody Merrill. I'm John Anik. We'll talk to you soon. See you later. Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family owned from the start. Same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Beckley SAB to CV 2024, Proximo, Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.